This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Hey, good afternoon to you. It is The After Party Live following The Mark Thompson Show. Thanks for sticking around and being part of it all. There's a lot going on. I will say it was a great Mark Thompson Show. Mark's Madness almost at its end. So if you're participating in that, I hope that you have fun. If you're celebrating Easter, or you did celebrate Easter, I hope you had a really wonderful time. Murphy says, too bad it's a school day or Jacob could come on with his ukulele and vamp some after party music. That's true. I've got a happy April Fools. I've got one in coming home from New York today, and I've got one at school today. It's weird the way Easter fell this year. Usually it kind of coincides with spring break, but we've got a whole nother week until spring break even begins. So interesting. For those keeping track, and tell me if this is weird, but I think I've mentioned my niece is applying to college, and we've been kind of monitoring her progress. And she's received entry to a number of UC schools, which is amazing. And she was waiting to find out if she got into Cornell University. And she applied there. I guess the rules are, and I didn't know this because I never did this, but when you apply for early admission, you can only pick one college. And usually you have to either say yes or no. And if you say no, then you don't get to reapply for spring. Like, that's it. They don't consider you. So they had a chance to lock her in, but they deferred her, which means that they would consider her with the rest of the applicants. So they did. And she got in, kind of. They offered her an admission on transfer, which means they want her to go to another four-year university for a year before transferring to Cornell. I've never heard of that before. I mean, usually it's you're in or you're not. I guess this is a thing that they do now. So I don't know. I mean, on its surface, it kind of feels a bit offensive. Like, you know, what, you don't want me all 4 years? But, Heather says, I did early admission to my college, lots of stress up front, but it saved me so much anxiety later on. And I think that's the point, right? And they had a chance to lock her in and they didn't do it. I think they were mistaken, but hey, that's, I'm her biggest fan, but I've never heard of that transfer thing before. But she's thinking it's good because if she picks another university that she got into, maybe UCLA or UC Davis, and hates it, she kind of has a plan B in her back pocket where she can then, you know, transfer to this other school. So interesting that they would do that. But that's the latest. That's what's happening there. Meanwhile, Julia sends me a note as she's waiting to get on the airplane. And this is kind of funny. She says, I have to read it to you. She says, you know, if I wanted to go to do Juilliard pre-college, I would have to move to New York and enroll in a high school here for a little while. And you can't do it without a parent or guardian living here with you. I'm like, you want us to move to New York now so you can do this? Would like Taylor Swift's family move to Nashville? Just a note, we're not moving to New York. All right, let's talk about something cool. Do you ever, like, I don't know, someone lets you in traffic and you kind of give them the hand, like, thank you, hoping they can see the outline of your hand. Sometimes I'll even, as if I roll down the window anymore, push the button and roll the window down and stick my hand outside the window to make sure that whoever it is that did something kind for me knows that I'm saying thank you or that I'm being polite about the whole situation. Well, I love what they're doing in Hawaii. I mean, you know, I love Hawaii anyway. And it's very polite and aloha-ish that they're doing this. But now on buses in Hawaii, they've got the shaka, you know, they've got the thank you very much kind of situation going on there. And it's really kind of cool. It's got a little aloha going on. So now these Hawaii buses, according to SF Gate, are doing something no other buses in the world do. In Hawaii, if you let the bus in front of you, they've got the LED screen on the back that lights up with a shaka, right? And it follows the word after the shaka. It says, mahalo for letting the bus in. I mean, who doesn't want to let the bus in now? In San Francisco, it's like, here comes the Muni bus cutting in front of me. And now it's going to, you know, you're going to get stuck at every red light behind the bus, right? But it's an incentive to let, it's called the bus. Their system is called the bus. It's an incentive to let the bus slide in front of you if you know you're going to see the Shaka and the Mahalo. A lot of people apparently tell the bus system it's part of the reward. They love seeing it. They should let the bus in anyway, but when they let the bus in and they get the Shaka and the Mahalo, they say it's really sweet for them. And it speaks to the psyche of how they live with aloha there, according to the person that runs the bus system. So the Shaka is like the hang loose gesture, right? Here's the, and I didn't know this was the way it started. But according to this article in SF Gate, the Shaka, or the hang loose, was traced back to the early 1900s to Hamana Khalili, who lost three fingers due to an accident at a sugar mill. So he would put up his hand and he was missing three fingers. Other residents adopted his wave, and later it developed the non-Hawaiian name, the Shaka, right? It can mean different things. It can mean see you later, or right on, or take it easy, or go for it, or right on, all kinds of things. And a lot of times if you're driving around Hawaii, Hawaii drivers throw these Shakas to other drivers who let them into a lane as a thank you. So here in California, we may raise our, you know, hands. In Hawaii, they give you the Shaka. You can see my hand, the Shaka. Yeah, there it is. And so now the bus is doing it too. I love this. Would you be more likely to let a bus in front of you or a big truck in front of you if they flashed a sign, the driver flashed a thank you sign? And don't you think we should all have little signs on the back of our cars that say thank you? Well, maybe they should say other stuff. No, we could get in trouble if they said other stuff. A lot of times I've wished I had a sign to tell people what I really thought on the roadway. I just think that's a cool story. I mean, I could see it. I could see it. I think that's cool, says Knit One Pearl One. Might be the only nice thing someone gets that day. Isn't that the truth? And Knit One lets cars in. So yeah. Not to be confused with a Shocker hand gesture. It's the Shaka. Do they have the bird too? They should have all the symbols on the little sign on the back of the bus. No, I don't know. Mindy Lee says, tough being a mom, crazy kid. Does she think houses grow on trees? Exactly. I don't even know if we can afford Berkeley. Somebody's applying for the FAFSA, let me say. Yeah. I thought that was a great story. And I think that they have something. They're onto something with the little LED signs on the back of cars, you know? And you might be right. Maybe it's just that we need all kinds of symbols there. Maybe not. Maybe just the thank you symbol. All right, let's move on to this one. This is an animal segment sponsored, actually the whole week of shows sponsored by Janet R. Huge thank you. This is, you can see the police officer feeding the little bunny. And this is something put out by the Petaluma Police Department, which is kind of cute. They put this out on Easter Sunday. It's just kind of a cute little kitschy thing to do. It says, Sunday, March 31st, approximately 7:33 a.m., officers dispatched to a report of a subject, pictured above, dropping large quantities of colorful candy-filled plastic ovals throughout numerous residences across Petaluma. Their way of saying Happy Easter. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for sending that one in. This one, a little more upsetting. Somebody left a soccer net up, and this deer got quite entangled in the soccer net. It's kind of a sad situation. This happened, I think, in the UK, in Cheltenham. The rescuers responded to reports of this deer in distress. They arrived to find the entire body wrapped up in this soccer net, and they removed it. They had to snip the net away from the deer. Only superficial injuries, so that's good. And it's a reminder, they say, put your soccer nets away. When they're not in use, you got to put them away, because this can happen to wildlife in the area. I bet that was scary for that animal. So that's not a good thing. This is a fantastic story that I'm in love with. This story has to do with a shoplifter who, I mean, don't mess with the mounted police. When they come for you, they come for you in a big way. So the police in New Mexico on horseback tracked down this guy who's accused of shoplifting, I think, I don't know, a few hundred bucks worth of stuff, right? And they mean business. Check this out.
Did he steal something? Come on. Hey, stop. You're being detained. Albuquerque police. Stop. You're being detained. Come on. Come on. Stop. Albuquerque police. You are being detained. Stop. 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 You're being detained.
And still he runs.
Stop! Albuquerque police, stop!
What does he mean?
Stop! You need to stop or force will be used against you. You understand me? Get on the ground! Get on the ground! Come on! Get on the ground! You're being detained!
Get out of the road!
Get out of the road! You are not free to leave, you understand? Force will be used against you.
How did you see?
You are being detained.
So, yes, force will be used against you and you are being detained. It's silly to think that this guy, for some reason, thinks that he can outrun a horse or three. There are three horses there, that the whole point of this thing, right? Three horses. And so this guy thinks somehow he can either outrun a horse, but then when they get to the guy, it's not like they can just jump down and arrest him. One of the other officers ends up doing that. But this guy allegedly stole $230 worth of goods from a store and was chased by mounted officers in Albuquerque. He's 30 years old, Mark Chacon, and that's the suspect. And he gets arrested. You know, I don't know if there's somebody on horseback coming at me, I'm stopping. I don't know about you guys. Apparently the horses had just gotten out of the trailer for their patrol shift. They were supposed to be doing a pedestrian safety operation when they were alerted that this man was running zigzag through the streets in Albuquerque. So you may have heard him there yell, "Wasn't me, wasn't me, I didn't do it." But the officers on the backs of all the horses there, that three or four of them, surrounded him in the middle of the road, wrangled him into custody. They say they're doing their job. They're doing it right. There's no question. If you're going to run from us, you're going to go to jail tired. So that's it. This man now facing charges of including possession of stolen goods, running from police, and also possession of drug paraphernalia. So that's the way that ends. And thus ends the animal segment. Let's talk about this girl from the Bay Area. She set a new record, shall we say. There she is, scuba diving. And she's done something kind of cool. I'm not sure what led her to want to do this, but she performed a number of magic tricks while scuba diving, setting a new Guinness World Record. Her name is Avery. She's 13 and she lives in Tiburon. And she started during the pandemic scuba diving and loved it. And so she started helping take care of creatures at the Aquarium of the Bay in San Francisco. And that is where she was encouraged by other scuba divers there to start doing magic tricks underwater. And she said that she was surprised to find out this is an official category in the Guinness World Records. And that's when she's like, I am going to set this record. So she stuffs all these props. She's got them on the side of her scuba suit. She's got everything. And she ends up really blowing this record out. So the previous record was 20 magic tricks underwater, and she did 38. She said it felt like this rare experience. It was really exciting to be able to do this in front of people, especially in a place I grew up and a place where I love to go. So she became a frequent volunteer at the Aquarium of the Bay, loved learning about the ocean, the animals, and everything else, and the effects that climate change have on the environments. And she took up underwater magic at the suggestion of one of her dive instructors and loved the challenge. She said they typically rely on speed, these magic tricks, but everything slows down underwater. So then you have to get really, really creative. The family worked with the aquarium to launch a fundraising campaign in connection with this, and they have made hundreds of thousands of dollars in donation, surpassing $500,000 in the first 100 days. For a fundraiser, they say, this huge and complex, raising ocean awareness about protecting animals, to do something fun like magic, she said, was really, really special. So there she is doing her magic tricks, and here she is talking about it. 13 years old, raises all this money, breaks this interesting, fun record to do this. I guess the Aquarium of the Bay has had a bit of a rough patch. It didn't get rent relief during the pandemic closure like other businesses down at the Port of San Francisco. And they still had to have all the costs of caring for these animals because pandemic or no, that doesn't stop. You still have to feed creatures and care for creatures and pay the people to go in and do all of this. So they accumulated the cost for caring of the animals. They had no ticket revenue. They had no ability to, you know, not pay rent, all of this. So that's why this fundraiser is so important for them and why every bit really mattered to them and was very important. So she did all these tricks with the marine life moving right past her. There were sharks in the tank and bat rays and all kinds of things. The hope is, according to the people at the aquarium, that other kids her age will be inspired by her and become ocean ambassadors and find their own outlets and their own ways to be ambassadors for the ocean. So she gets this plaque, this Guinness Book of World plaque, of records plaque. And they say it proves that you can do something like that no matter what age you are. So well done, Avery, raising money for the Aquarium of the Bay, setting a new record. How cool. Love that story. Happy April 1st. This is, quite honestly, this is a April Fool's Day. Happy April Fool's prank by 7-Eleven. They say they have this new drink, right? Hot dog sparkling water. And it made me think of the water left over after hot dogs and how, you know, we're trying to repurpose everything, reuse everything, save water every way we can, collect it in the shower. What about, I mean, if you boil a hot dog, do you just dump out the water afterwards, kind of with the oil floating on the top? Can you imagine repurposing hot dog water? No thanks. But this 7-Eleven story, they say they're coming out with this hot dog drink. They're announcing it. Big announcement today. Hot dog sparkling water at 7-Eleven. Customers, they say, and not only hot dog water, but a whole new collection of 7 select sparkling waters. Here are the flavors: lemon lime, green apple, sweet orange, and hot dog. The Big Bite Hot Dog Sparkling Water combines the delicious mouth-watering experience of 7-Eleven's iconic Big Bite Hot Dog into one refreshing beverage, ketchup and mustard included. Gone are the days of alternating bites of a hot dog with sips of a beverage. Now, those on the go can swap the bun for bubbles. No, I don't think so. It's expected, they say, to hit the shelves April 1st, which is, of course, today, April Fool's Day. No. It's one of many companies now apparently doing this whole fake product launch on April 1st. Here's more. I have other products for you that have made their way to the shelves on April 1st. Scotch Tape puts out Scotch from the Highlands, a new choice for discerning palates. No. I don't think we want Scotch by Scotch, right? I appreciate the humor, though. I mean, it's kind of funny, I guess, in a way. Let's see if I can't show you some others. There's some pretty good ones out there. Let's see. Other pranks for April Fool's Day include, that's the Scotch one. See if they have another one. They had sour cream and onion. Oh, here it is. You have to view it on Instagram. Sour cream and onion soda. Kind of gross. No thanks. Oh, it looks like it's not working now. Yeah, they had sour cream and onion. There it is. Sour cream and onion soda made by Pringles is what they were is calling it. The indulge in the creamy rich. An utterly irresistible soda experience. No, thank you. And then they say, if you're still reading this, happy April Fools. So that's kind of funny. Some other ones that they have done include Omaha Steaks Meaty Spritzy Spray, promising to infuse bland fast foods with the show-stopping flavors of world-famous steaks, chicken, and pork. Not real. The flavors were Omaha Fog, Hog Haze, and Cock-a-Doodle-Doo. IKEA had a line of hoax products, Invisiball, shoe racks, laundry baskets. The company posted photos to social media showing household clutter contained by a piece from the Invisiball collection, each costing $1.04, which is a play on the today's date. Yeah. They did a cereal company Post and manufacturer of Kraft macaroni and cheese announced the release of multicolored mac and cheese fruity flavor fruity pebbles. So again, they're not the first companies to do this, but hot dog water really caught my eye. Can you imagine? So gross. No, thank you. I'm going to pass on that one. There's a city where all the rich people flock to. Can you guess what it is? It's not in the Bay Area, but it is, I believe, in California, right on the beautiful coastline. It is Ranchos Palos Verdes. It is the California city that has been named America's richest retirement town. This is a study from Go Banking Rates that was done last month. Rancho Palos Verdes is near Torrance, and San Pedro in Southern California. It's been named the richest retirement community because it has a median household income of $166,747. So you got to be loaded to get one of these coastal houses, right? They looked at the personal finance website that looked at American cities with a minimum population of 15,000 people, in which 25% of the residents are age 65 or older. The top 10 richest retirement towns in the United States here, Ranchos Palos Verdes. The second is Highland Park, Illinois. Then comes Bainbridge Island in Washington. Fourth, East Honolulu, Hawaii. Fifth is Melville, New York. Sixth is Laguna Beach, California. Followed by Paramus, New Jersey. Naples, Florida. Number nine, Walnut Creek, California, one of the richest retirement places in America. And 10, Cerritos, California. If you were going to retire in Rancho Palos Verdes, you would need at least $1.4 million for 25 years of retirement, or $1.7 million for 30 years. On average, a retiree in California would need $90,399 a year to live comfortably during retirement. So, again, that's all data from Go Banking Rates. Who's going to make $90,000 a year in retirement? If you spent your entire life saving, maybe. But most of us have bills to pay, right? We're not doing that. Did you know that Netflix had a name before Netflix, and it wasn't Netflix. companies, thank God for this. The company's founders say, before we settled on Netflix, we were going to call it kibble, like dog kibble, pet food kibble. Mark Randolph and Reed Hastings say they originally called their company Kibble before they switched it to Netflix a short while later. They said, we were concerned about building a service that looked good, but that nobody wanted to use. So we chose Kibble to remind us of the old advertising adage that it doesn't matter how good your dog food advertising campaign is if the dogs won't eat the dog food. They said they never intended to keep the name Kibble through the launch of the service, but that it was a really good placeholder because they already owned the domain name kibble.com from another company idea that provided personalized dog food. Mostly they changed it because they said it was awful. But it's really hard, they said, to come up with a good name. So you want to pick a pre-launch name, your beta name, that is so bad that when you get close to launch and you start getting desperate, you won't just give in and use that beta name. Like, it's obvious that you can't settle for that, right? There's no way. Here's some other names that they were floated for Netflix. Take One, Netpix, P-I-X, Netpix, Now Showing, or simply Flicks. It's such a part of this whole streaming culture that we've now become immersed in that I can't imagine it being named anything other than Netflix. Now Showing? No. That's too cluttered. Take One might have been okay. Netpix? No, Netflix. They got it right. Flicks might have been all right, but I think Netflix is good. They said Netflix, part of the things that the reason that maybe they weren't going to use it is because it sounded too similar to Skinflix, right? Which is kind of a porny term. But they said it was still the best one. So even though it was just their beta name, Kibble apparently stuck around long enough that it's still acknowledged by Netflix as the original name of the country. That's kind of a company internal history that I didn't know that I find interesting. Birds. Look at that beautiful flamingo. A sticky piece of DNA is apparently rewriting the story of avian evolution and shaking up the whole family tree. This, according to Popular Science, we were very wrong about birds. The story begins like this. An enormous asteroid crashed into the Earth about 65 million years ago. While terrestrial dinosaurs like the famed Tyrannosaurus Rex were wiped out, a lot of avian animals thrived. Considering that there were more than 10,000 species of birds on Earth, that might be an understatement. And so now, fast forward, keeping all the families of birds organized is apparently very difficult to do. So many species and their evolution kind of unclear. So now that we have advances in genomic sequencing and analysis, and that is now creating a better picture of how dinosaurs, living dinosaurs, evolved. There's a couple of different studies on this published today. One, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences and Nature. Scientists say a genetic event about 65 million years ago misled them about the true history of avian evolution. I really hope this isn't an April Fool's story because I'm taking it seriously. A section one of chromosome hasn't mixed together with nearby DNA as it should have. That section is only a tiny fraction of the bird genome, but they say it was enough to make it difficult for scientists to build a more detailed bird family tree. But a few years ago, advances in computer technology used to study these genomes helped scientists piece together a family tree for NeoAves. NeoAves, the group includes the majority of bird species. Using the genomes of 48 species, they split them into two major categories. Doves and flamingos were in one group, and all the other bird species belonged to the other group. when a similar genetic analysis was repeated using 363 bird species for this new study, the team saw a different family tree emerge. And this one has four main groups, and it reveals that flamingos and doves are more distantly related, and it all came back to this very specific spot in the chromosomes. One spot on the genome where the genes were not as mixed together as they should have been over millions of years of reproduction. Kind of interesting. When they looked at the genes, what the tree supported, all of a sudden it popped out that all of the genes that support the older tree are all in one spot. And that's what started this whole study. Birds combine genes from a father and a mother into the next generation. But first, they mix the genes they inherit from their parents when creating their own reproductive material. It's called recombination, and it's something that occurs in humans, maximizing a species' genetic diversity by ensuring no two siblings are exactly the same. One section of the chromosome didn't mix with the DNA nearby like it should have, and basically spent millions of years frozen in time. That chromosomal section makes up only 2% of the bird genome, but it was enough to convince scientists that most birds could be grouped into two major categories. They call them Passerera and Columbia. The new, more accurate family tree takes into account misleading sections of the avian genome and identifies four main groups of birds. So, interesting what we're still learning to this day, thanks to better technology. Can we talk for a moment about holes in the sea? There are holes in the sea, and they are in the bottom, near Germany. They're calling them mysterious divots in the seafloor, and they think that they have a kind of a cute cause. The North Sea, about 100 meters underwater, there are about 40,000 shallow pits in the sand, kind of like pockmarks. Some of them are bigger, some of them are smaller. Variety of sizes and shapes, too. Some look like long furrows or half moons, concentric circles of sand. Others are ringed by mounds of sediment. And so scientists took a look at this and they thought, is there methane seeping from the sediment? Or what's going on? What's creating these divots in the seafloor, these holes? Apparently, these seafloor marks weren't like others, typical of methane or gas coming out of the seafloor. That tends to leave a circular pit that has a conical bottom. And so these look really peculiar. The scientists said it looked as if someone had disturbed the sand from above. And so they took a look at millions of pre-existing scans of the area made with an echo sounder, which shoots out sound waves and measures how they bounce back, like sonar. And they looked at these divots or cavities and confirmed that their shapes are unusual. And when they filmed the seafloor, they couldn't find any methane or organisms living nearby. And they also found new pits emerging or widening nearby. And that is also not associated with gas coming up from the seafloor. Now they think what led to the divots or sea holes on the seafloor are hungry harbor dolphins. So they found grains of sand in the stomachs of stranded harbor porpoises. They also found the remains of sand eels or small fish that bury themselves in the seafloor. So it looks like maybe the sea porpoises or the harbor porpoises grub in the sand to scare out the sand eels who are hiding in there and create the pits as they try to suck up the food. It's just an idea so far, but that's what they think, that harbor porpoises feed during their long dives. And they've even seen captive porpoises digging in the sand, but no one has actually seen a wild harbor porpoise in the act of disturbing the seafloor like this. So study it, right? Here comes the study. University of Southern Denmark. They say these harbor porpoises are a little shy. They're hard to identify. They're difficult to follow. But they have seen harbor porpoises poking into stones and algae to reveal small fish. So it's definitely a possibility. And the North Sea is home to many kinds of porpoises and these eels. And so that's what they idea is, that that's what's creating for, has created 40,000 of these holes or pits on the bottom of the seafloor. If they say the foraging behavior is as common as harbor porpoises, there are about 700,000 spread around the planet. The identifying porpoise habitat could be as simple as just looking for the holes they dig. The story from Popular Science, also published in Hakai magazine, H-A-K-A-I. So thanks to them for that really interesting story. I wanted to tell you guys that some new Marvin Gaye music has been found. Have you heard about this? Well, entertainment news for you. Apparently, the music has been uncovered in Belgium. And instead of it just being this wonderful thing that there's more music that he left behind for us to enjoy and remember him, it could lead to, of course, a legal battle. So Marvin Gaye died April 1st, 40 years ago. And just a few days ago, apparently, this new music was found. He moved to Belgium at about in 1982 after he met this Belgian concert promoter. And he had a problem with cocaine. He was trying to get his life back on track. So he moved there. He lived with Belgian musician Charles Dumoulin and then returned to the studio. And when he passed, he left stage costumes, notebooks, cassettes of never-before-heard music. He left them apparently to Dumoulin. And there's a lawyers for the Marvin Gaye's family. So Dumoulin passes away in 2019, and these items are now in possession of his family members. There are at least 30 tapes, 66 demos of brand new Marvin Gaye songs. Some are complete. Some are, they say, as good as that the song he did, Sexual Healing, because it was made all around the same time frame. So now it comes down to a potential legal battle over the music. So he gave them to Dumoulin, the story goes, and said, do whatever you want with it, and then he never came back. The items were intended for Dumoulin, they say, not his family members. That's a key sticking point in the legal process here. Belgian property law says if someone holds property of something, no matter how it's acquired, it's theirs after 30 years. And this happened 40 years ago, right? Or more. But that doesn't affect intellectual property. So it could mean that while the Dumoulin family has the tapes, they won't be able to publish the songs. That permission would come from the Marvin Gaye family, which means they all have to work together on this. And so does it all come down to who gets the money for the music, or does it come down to giving the world this music? The family of Marvin Gaye and the collection in the hands of the Dumoulin heirs, they say if we put our hands together and find the right people, that we could come together on a plan to release this music. That's the thought of some. But it's not the first time Marvin Gaye's heirs have gone to court for his music. They sued Robin Thicke and Pharrell Williams over that song Blurred Lines because they said it copied part of his song Gotta Give It Up. And a federal jury said they're right, and they were awarded almost $7.5 million. So, when will we hear this new Marvin Gaye music? It's exciting to know it's out there, but it's also frustrating to know that it's probably going to come down to money and power and control. Did you know, and this seems kind of like obvious to me, but apparently if you are exercising, you're less likely to have trouble with insomnia. Now, this doesn't go for everyone because I know people who exercise regularly and still have insomnia, have trouble sleeping. But this new study is showing that regular exercise is associated with less insomnia. Physically active people have a lower risk of insomnia symptoms and extreme sleep duration, long and short. The study was published in the journal BMJ Open. So the study, they look at more than 4,300 people from age 39 to 67, and it took them 10 years to do this. The participants in 9 European countries were surveyed about their frequency, intensity, and duration of physical activity, as well as their symptoms of any type of insomnia, the amount of sleep they got each night, their feelings of sleepiness during the day. And the findings were this: those who were persistently active were 55% more likely to be normal sleepers, people who sleep 6 to 9 hours a night. And those who became active over the time period were 21% more likely to sleep normally after adjusting for age, sex, body mass index, smoking history, etc. The results, they say, are strong on their own, but also supported by existing science. This, according to the associate professor of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He wasn't involved in this research, Dr. David Neubauer, but he said, it makes perfect sense. The results in line with previous studies that have shown a beneficial effect of physical activity on symptoms of insomnia. The current study additionally shows the importance of consistency in exercise over time. So it matters to be physically active throughout your life in order to reduce the risk of insomnia and short sleep duration. It gives them ideas, they say the researchers, that maybe we don't always think about for treatment of insomnia, right? Here, take a sleeping pill, or make your room dark, or, you know, don't use your phone before bed. But did they ever say, make sure you get enough exercise, maybe you can actually have a good night's sleep? I don't know. Were you caught up in this whole thing about incognito? There's a lot of people pretty upset about this, that when they say you've gone incognito, a lot of people, I mean, look at the hat and glasses, right? You think, oh, I can search for whatever I want and Google won't know. They won't keep track of this because it's in the incognito mode, which wasn't true. Turns out Google can see exactly what they're doing no matter what mode you're in and keep records of it as well. And that they did. Well, now because of a lawsuit filed over this whole thing, Google has to delete billions of browser records to settle this lawsuit. They're going to delete billions of data records because this suit filed in 2020 accused Google of misrepresenting the kind of data it collects from users who browse the internet incognito, supposed to be a private browsing mode, right? They agreed to settle the suit last year, but the terms of the settlement were first disclosed in a filing today. As part of the settlement, Google has to delete billions of data records that reflect the private browsing activities of users in the class action suit. Like, quick, everybody join the suit. Google will also update its disclosure to inform users about what data it actually collects each time a user initiates a private browsing session. And they say they've already started to initiate these changes. For the next 5 years, Google will also let private browsing users block third-party cookies as part of the settlement. And Google won't be tracking people's choices to browse the internet privately. That's what they say. They will no longer track people's choices to browse the internet privately. It's being called by the attorney representing the plaintiffs an historic step in requiring honesty and accountability from dominant technology companies. So the settlement requires Google to delete and remediate in an unprecedented scope and scale the data that it improperly collected in the past. Google says, "We're pleased to settle this lawsuit. We always thought it was meritless." Nevertheless, they say, "We never associate data with users when they use incognito mode, but we're happy to delete old technical data that was never associated with an individual and was never used for any form of personalization." Originally, the plaintiffs wanted $5 billion. They're getting zero. But they are getting all this data deleted, and that's pretty good. The users won't receive damages as part of the settlement, but they can still sue for damages individually. I mean, I think they did us all a favor. When you click to Cognito mode, it tells you, not everything you search for right here is going to be private. So they know they have to tell you, right? This is kind of a scary one. The bird flu, the avian flu, is in the second person infected in America. So they've had an outbreak of bird flu in dairy cows. And the person who worked on a dairy farm and had direct contact with this cattle that was infected tested positive for the avian flu last week in Texas. The case was confirmed by the CDC over the weekend. That person who does have the avian flu is recovering and was told to isolate. The only symptom they had was eye inflammation. And they're being treated with this drug, the generic version of Tamiflu. And the CDC is working with other federal and health partners to investigate. But they're asking people to monitor for any additional cases of avian influenza. The case, they say, doesn't change the risk to the general public. Still very, very low. Again, only two people in the United States have tested positive for this. They're monitoring this, though, because influenza viruses constantly change. Continued surveillance and preparedness efforts are critical. It's a developing situation, they say, and they'll share new updates as they become available. The other case was in 2022, and it was a man in Colorado who also had direct exposure to poultry and the culling of birds that had this bird flu. Regarding the cattle outbreak right now, and this man in Texas that tested positive, they say there's no risk to the commercial milk supply. Dairies are required to destroy or divert milk from any sick cows, plus pasteurization kills avian flu viruses. It's gross. Cases have been reported among bears, foxes, possums, and seals. Scientists say the animals probably got sick when they ate or interacted with infected birds. The virus can spread through feces or saliva, through contact with contaminated surfaces as well. But human-to-human transmission of the avian flu through close contact, they say, is very, very rare. The symptoms can range from none at all to mild flu to severe. So it just depends. But, you know, you don't like to see somebody getting that. Lastly, I will do this story about a topic that's means a lot to me, kind of like the whole plastic thing. This is a story about flame retardant. It's funny because a friend of mine and I both had babies at the same time, well, 6 months apart. So they're in the same grade. They go to the same school. They've been friends since they were babies. And the different choices that we made as mothers, it was very important to her to have milk that had an infusion of, what's this stuff that, flax oil or some type of oil that increases brain development, right? It was important to me not to have, I used organic milk, but the whole flax oil, you know, that wasn't important to me, but the clothing, the bedding, the pajamas that had no flame retardants on them, hugely important to me. So if someone gave me something that had flame retardant on it, I wouldn't use it. Because I figure this, if flames are close enough to the mattress or to the place where my child is sleeping or wherever, that the child catches fire, the flame retardant pajamas probably aren't going to help that much. Whereas with 100%, and that's also quite a chance, right? Whereas with 100% certainty, I know that the chemicals all over the pajamas are getting onto my kid and that probably seeping into her in some way. So that was one of my things, right? Well, now come to find out that flame retardants are associated with thousands of consumer products linked to cancer in people. This is the first time that this link has been officially made. So these flame retardants have been used for decades on thousands of consumer products in the United States. And now we know they raise the risk of dying from cancer. People with the highest levels of polybrominated diphenyl ethers, or PBDEs, in their blood had 300% increased risk of dying from cancer compared with people with the lowest levels. And these are things that are in our houses. I mean, they're fire-resistant carpet we're walking around on, paints on our walls. It's covering our furniture. It's covering our mattresses, some of the clothes that we wear. It's all around us. To our knowledge, according to the story in CNN and according to the researchers, this is the first study examining the association of PBDE exposure with a risk of cause-specific mortality in the general adult population from the United States. They looked at levels of chemical compounds in the blood of 1,100 people in 2003 and 2004 who participated in the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. It's a longitudinal federal study on the health of U.S. citizens. And they compared PBDE levels with death certificates between 15 and 17 years later. This is a study published today in the journal JAMA Network, JAMA Network Open. Well, the study, they say, found significant association between PBDEs and deaths from all cancers, researchers couldn't determine a specific type of cancer from the available data. So, this is what we know, right? The new study links PBDEs to deaths from cancer, building a case for the association between flame retardants and cancer mortality being real. The chemicals, they say, have long half-lives and stay in the human body for years. And the impact is going to continue because we can't get them out of the environment overnight. And we've seen this debate, this long-term debate. Well, if we don't have the fire retardant, then we're going to have people dying from fires, and we're going to have more fires that are uncontrollable. So what would you rather have, the risk of the fire or the risk of the chemicals? I mean, neither would be my answer, right? There's a spokesperson for the American Chemistry Council, which is an alliance of companies that make and distribute flame retardants. And they said in response to this survey, they told CNN, "We haven't had a chance to thoroughly review the report on polybrominated diphenyl ethers, but we consistently advocate for the use of sound scientific research and data." It's really frustrating because now we know that it's associated with dying from cancer, but we knew before this that PBDEs were endocrine disruptors, 3 to 10 times greater than people found in the European nations. People in the United States had these PBDEs, these endocrine disruptors, in our blood levels, 3 to 10 times greater than people in other countries. Flame retardant chemicals can also pass to developing fetuses via the placenta and to newborns via breast milk. It's a huge problem. And even though I didn't put my baby in flame retardant pajamas and I bought her an organic crib mattress, it's still all over my house, right? On the couch, on the chairs, on the carpet, on stuff that was here before we moved in. You can't get rid of this stuff. So, important study. This again, the study out of is published today in CNN. It was done with data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. And you can find more about it not only in CNN or on CNN.com, but in the JAMA Network Open, if that's interesting to you. Okay, thus concludes the After Party Live for today. Boy, it got a little serious there at the end, didn't it? I'll tell you, let's get rid of the chair on fire. Woo, hot, hot. Mindy says firefighters are getting new firefighter outfits because of the cancer problem. Firefighters at horrible risk, right? Karen says dangerous, much like fireproofing used before these chemicals, asbestos. Right. Lori says we're over-safe-defying ourselves. Resistant bacteria, cancer from chemicals and flame retardants, plastic. We might be safer in the moment, but not the long term. It's true. It says, Beth says, hard to find baby clothes without retardants. It's true. Less now. 14 years ago, when I had Julia, that was the case. But now there's all kinds of organic baby clothes. It's like people caught on. They get it. Organic mattresses are easier to find. So, and again, you can take these steps, but you can, as my husband likes to tell me regarding organic food and not using as many plastics in the house and everything else, you can limit the risk, but you can never cut out the risk, right? We're all going to have the microplastics in our system and the PBDEs in our system. But maybe by doing certain things, you can cut your risk, but you can't eliminate it because of where we live, the toxic soup in which we're all swimming around, right? Yeah. Regarding Incognito, Lori says, I never believed it. It's that the search history for Incognito doesn't show up in your regular account search history. I've given up thinking anything is private unless you use cash in person. And that's right. And even then, there might be a camera in the store that shows that you're there buying something, whatever it might be. Lori, I don't know what you're buying. You know. Thank you guys for participating in the conversation. I would so appreciate it if you could click the like button on the way out. Much appreciate your spending this hour with me and for hanging out. Has it been an hour? 56 minutes. So it's close to an hour. I will see you tomorrow on the Nikki Maduro Show. It's going to be another great show. Of course, David K. Johnston coming up on the Mark Thompson Show tomorrow, and we'll have some more fun stories for you. Hopefully more fun than today on the after party. Happy April Fool's Day, whatever it means to you, if you're going to be tricked or if you're just going to try not to be tricked, whatever it is. But thank you again for spending the time. And again, I will see you tomorrow. Until then, bye.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.